Welcome to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Kate Redmond. This week on Local Motion, I'll be speaking with Paonia attorney and human rights advocate Claire Noon on women weavers in Bosnia. Her company, Sovereign Threads, lifts up Srebrenica survivors and gives them a way to heal from the horrors of the Balkan War. I will also speak with Dr. Danica Anderson, activist and social scientist with a specialty in women's trauma. She authored the book Blood and Honey, The Secret History of Women, that was illustrated by Paonia artist Erin Hillary. Dr. Anderson has taught writing workshops in the North Fork Valley and has been a guest here on KVNF on One Woman's Perspective. This program will first air on February 2nd, which is Imbolc, the halfway point between the winter solstice and the spring equinox, and is an important holiday in Bosnia. Here first is Claire Noon. How did you get involved in the communities of Bosnia-Herzegovina?
I, growing up in rural Colorado, had heard bits and pieces about what happened in Bosnia, but really was not familiarized with it at all. I did not speak the language. And I landed in Croatia, in Zagreb, and started this adventure. We lived for 2 months in Croatia, 2 months in Serbia, and 2 months in Bosnia with host families and studied the conflict and its roots and its effects from all sides, which I think really set an amazing groundwork for my understanding of the nuances of this conflict. I often know that from the West, we want to say, oh, it's just this deeply embedded, no one could have stopped it. This is just how people are there. They fight. Learning from all sides, living with Serbs, living with Bosniaks, living with Croats, you really get to see that there is no ultimate evil or ultimate victim, that there is much nuance and much influence. I fell in love with the region, went back to college, wrote my thesis on Bosnian electoral politics and how it perpetuates division. Tito did an amazing job. For his faults, he was a dictator, but he really minimalized by decree the ethnic and religious identities. He said, we are all Yugoslavs, and that is how we will interact with each other. And for better or for worse, the region was peaceful. People intermarried, lived, you know, as neighbors. When Tito died, Slobodan Milosevic, the political voice of Serbs, planted this seed that it was us or them, that everyone is out for themselves against the ethnic group. And then after college, I went to return to Srebrenica as a peace fellow for the advocacy project. And my mandate was to document, to advocate, and to arrive at an already formed community with an already formed mission and goal, and what could I do to assist? So my community was the Widows of Srebrenica. They had already formed community after the fall of Srebrenica. The men and women were separated, the men were taken and executed, and the women were put on buses and sent to the nearest Muslim territory, which was Tuzla. And that's where they were housed for years in a refugee camp. And my dear friend and colleague, Beba Hadzic, who was the primary school principal in Srebrenica, kind of was a natural leader for this community of women. They came to her and said, what can we do? She asked Oxfam for yarn, and they provided it. And they said, if you can sit, you can knit. So they all sat around talking of their loss, grieving, moving through it while keeping their hands busy. So when I arrived to document the reburial of newly discovered victims in mass graves, to document the commemoration, the lives of these women, it became very apparent to me that their art and their craft played a large role in their survival and their repair. They could also play a role in their economic stability. So I set up Sovereign Threads with them, and I sell their handicraft products abroad, take no cut myself, send all of the money back to the women. We have now 40 women as part of our project who are fully employed and paid, as well as running the centers in Tuzla and Srebrenica, where women can come, drink coffee, and be together. So I ended up applying to law school from Bosnia to hold justice as the highest form of repair, and to go and make sure that these perpetrators are held accountable. I ended up going to the International Criminal Tribunal for Former Yugoslavia in The Hague, in the Netherlands. I was assigned on the prosecution team of Ratko Mladic, who was the chief general who planned, executed, and perpetrated the Srebrenica genocide. This man, I was sitting in a courtroom across from him. I felt an amazing sense of pride and urgency in my representation of these women in the court. I returned in 2018 for the judgment, which ended up being war crimes, genocide, crimes against humanity, and 10 other offenses that he will now be spending the rest of his life in jail. There was an amazing sense of release and vindication and joy in the community, but not the amount that I was hoping. But I remember walking down the street with one of the weavers, and a man crossed on the other side of the street, and her face went white. She looked down, and her whole demeanor changed. And as we walked past, I said, what was that all about? And she said, that's the man that killed my husband. At that point, I knew that you can do all of the economic development, community building, advocacy, but if there's no justice, if there is no accountability for these crimes, there is no healing, there is no repair. That the fact that the perpetrators of these horrendous crimes are walking around and living in the community with impunity plants this deep, deep seed of resentment, hatred, and fear. The individual gunmen, the individual drivers of trucks, the individual soldiers still live and work and vote in the same communities as the families that they destroyed.
Describe Srebrenica before the war.
I grew up in Glenwood Springs, live here now in Paonia, but I feel a very strong affinity to mountains, hot water, beautiful forests. Just like our communities, it was a small health community where people from all over Yugoslavia would come to cleanse themselves, to soak in the hot springs, to breathe the fresh mountain air, and to get peace away from the city center. The UN decided to create a safe zone in which they said, if you come here, we will have soldiers on the ground and protect you. So people from all over the region flooded into Srebrenica. So a town that was before about 4,000 people swelled up to about 30,000 to 50,000 people. There was no food. There were no rations. The idea of a safe zone was not fully executed or brought to fruition. And for that, I think the international community will always hold responsibility. When the Serbs came knocking at the door, the ring around the town of Srebrenica, there was nothing there to keep them from entering. There was not a single bullet fired in the fall of Srebrenica. A lot of blame is placed on the Dutch battalion who was currently stationed in Srebrenica to defend. But when you take a larger look at it, it's why was it up to these 40, 50 men when the international community had made a promise? There were several points at which a single airstrike would have stopped the Serb advance and could have protected these innocent civilians, but unfortunately that did not happen. And this beautiful mountain community became the poster child of genocide in Europe in the modern era.
25 years after the war and the UN abject failure to protect the people of Srebrenica, how are the effects of the war still being felt?
War destroys a community. It destroys a sense of safety, and especially in a situation like Bosnia, where prior to the war, this was a country that was multicultural, multiracial. There were intermarriages of Bosnians and Serbs. There were neighborhoods that no one even knew the ethnicity of their neighbor. It was not relevant. And then when you bring on that kind of fervor of your ethnicity is all that matters. This is it. It's either you or them. You have to strike first. Once that kind of rhetoric was spread across the region, neighbors were perpetrating murder against other neighbors. There was a deep sense of betrayal and pain that I think a war where it's more that turned families against each other, schoolmates against each other, coworkers, church communities, like it was corrosive to the community structure of Bosnia and the individual structure of Bosnia, of how people interacted with the world and each other.
So how much of the Srebrenica massacre do you think stemmed from hatred of Muslims, or was it more of a cultural hatred than a religious hatred?
I think that fear and hatred are very close siblings. The fear that was stoked after Tito died, and when people, so Slovenia first broke away, then Croatia, it was built into the Yugoslav constitution that any country could separate at any time. So it was peaceful. Slovenia left, not a single shot fired. Croatia left, a little bit of conflict. There was issues in border towns that are horrible battles, but it broke away, and then Bosnia tried to break away, and it was, everything blew up because the leaders of the representative ethnic groups and religions, so they're kind of one and the same. We have Orthodox Serbs, we have Bosniaks, which are Muslim, and we have Catholic Croats. So those are the three. They're kind of ethnically divided as well as racially, and a nationality division. Everyone is out for themselves, and if we want our homeland, we have to fight for it. It's either us or them. The lines just happen to be drawn on religion and ethnicity, but the same people who were perpetrating this violence years before were at each other's wedding, watched each other's kids.
Weaving in Bosnia, much like in Oaxaca or Guatemala, is endemic to their culture. Can you talk about the weaving?
When I first came to Bosnia, I was not focused at all on the handicraft weavings and beautiful art of the culture. I was focused on the war and on justice and on getting people okay. It was kind of by chance that I found this community of women who had used weaving, much like their ancestors had, as a way to bring community together, to tell stories, to create art. It was a part of a deep identity that goes back for generations. When I arrived with these women in Bosnia, they had floor-to-ceiling rugs and čarape that they had just done for their own purposes, for their own kind of healing.
And what is čarape?
No one in the country. Čarape are Bosnian slipper socks. Similar to Japan, when you walk in, you take off your outdoor shoes and you put on slippers, you put on čarape, and that is what you use inside your home. The pattern that they use is handed down from generation to generation. They have a pattern that their parents had taught them and that they use to kind of make their own for their family. There just wasn't a market in Bosnia. People are like, yeah, my aunt made me some. I don't need to buy some from you. So they just stacked up. When I started working with these women, we built a loom. We did all of this beautiful stuff and were able to source locally the wool that they used to make their traditional Bosnian rugs. I started to understand more the story and heritage that is told in each rug. And there's beautiful patterns that are from different regions in Bosnia, like different women who maybe didn't live together in the same community, but through the war have all been sent to Tuzla, have different inherited patterns or colors that represent different things. There's a very strong history and heritage of the weavings. These women will sit, talk, and share stories of their family and their culture and weave together. Each woman has her own family design. The colors are just whatever is available. There's so much story in it. We actually raised our prices a little this last year in order to train and bring on board younger women, millennials, who are suffering extreme unemployment, are having to leave the country to find opportunity elsewhere. We really wanted the younger women to inherit this beautiful tradition. It's very difficult for genocide survivors to be completely isolated, as you can understand. So I'm very heartened when I see a pod of red and green pairs with different women's signature designs. So that tells me a lot about the state of the women, even when I'm not there.
That was Claire Noon, Paonia attorney and human rights advocate, speaking with me about the survivors of the 1995 Srebrenica massacre and weavers who are rebuilding their lives and community through the art of their weaving. I also spoke with Dr. Denica Anderson, Dr. Anderson grew up in a Bosnian household in Chicago and has been working with the International Criminal Court as a psychosocial gender victims expert. Her work has led her to Chad, Congo, Uganda, and to Bosnia, where she has taken a special interest in the rituals and the art of Bosnian culture. How did you get involved with the Bosnian women?
At the time, I was in Holland, and this was in 1997, and the Balkan War was really not over even in 1997, although historically it's marked as 1994 that the war ended in former Yugoslavia region. And they were having quite a few refugees going into Holland. Most are refugees at that time. And they heard that there was a clinician like myself, where I was working in trauma and had all this experience. Plus, I knew how to speak Bosnian. I got an email from, it's called Medics Mind Awareness, you know, landmines, a small Bosnian NGO in Bosnia. Stavnik, which is about an hour and a half from the Winter Olympic sites, 1984. So I didn't know who this guy was. He was just writing me, and he wrote in pretty good English. And they said, will you come and help us? We'll meet you at the airport. I wrote back, and I didn't know if it was for sure or some kind of scam. I flew from Amsterdam to Sarajevo, and it was still militarized airport. It was at the old airport. And these two guys, one kind of chubby and the other one quite thin, you know, middle age, were waiting for me with my name. I don't know how they knew about me, but somehow they tracked my work and that I was living in Holland and with the Mostar refugees in Holland. And then also at that time, the Yugoslav War Crimes Tribunal referred me, I didn't know it, to these individuals. And so that's how it started.
Oddly enough, my two guests have never met. However, they have both worked closely with the widows of Srebrenica.
I worked with the Srebrenica war crime survivors in places that where women lost everything, even their own families. What they had left was this weaving. Most of these women are illiterate. Most of them did not drive a car. Everything was done through their husbands or their male relatives in Bosnia. When women have nothing, they return to this domestic category of life. And then it becomes such a coveted value for them, not only monetarily wise, but for themselves.
Can you talk about the cultural roots of the weaving patterns of the Bosnian women?
Dr. Maria Gumbuta is a classically trained archaeologist who had done a lot of research, and she did a lot of the archaeological sites that are found in the former Yugoslavia area, and actually did a catalog of all these motifs and icons and what they meant. So I showed it to these women that I work with and all the weavers I came upon, and they knew what each symbol was.
Can you give our listeners some examples of the icons that you find in Bosnian weaving?
One of the motifs they have is of birds, lots of birds motif. In the former Yugoslav, especially in Bosnia, Maria Gumbuta has unearthed hundreds and thousands of these bird goddess clay figures, over 4,000 years old. The design on them and everything was exactly what was done on the weaving of the birds on their cloth or on their rugs. So the birds are very, very big. And I think it relates to Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga comes from the Slavic, and basically translated, it means Mother Nature. All the motifs are about Mother Nature in one way or another, but that bird one is constantly appearing along with the flower motif. The other motif that is really outstanding in everything, even the architecture, whatever's left in artifacts, is the spiral.
That's fascinating. What other icons could you describe?
They have one picture, it's called Life. It's almost like a flower with a main staff in the middle and about three on each side, like these, I want to say leaves, but it isn't. But that motif means life, and everybody knew what most of their rugs will have that motif either in the middle or edging the rugs, or what we call chilling. A lot of the tree of life is the main one. What was interesting is that they all knew this, and they thought I was kind of like a ignorant woman. Like, how could she? She's supposedly Bosnian American, and she doesn't know all of this. And she has this book, and it's like, she has to learn it from a book. What they were talking about is weaving is from tacit knowledge. Well, what's tacit knowledge? It's knowing without being taught, right? These women were so intelligent with tacit knowledge, and weavers are the carriers of tacit knowledge. What cannot be taught, only lived. Oral memory tradition is a science of rituals.
One subject that Dr. Anderson deals with in her book, Blood and Honey, is the science of epigenetics. A study of heritable gene function and activity that do not involve alterations to the genetic code, but still get passed down through generations. A cultural history and memory.
Okay, the science of epigenetics, and I'll describe it in such a simple term. Everything that you repeat, whatever you live daily, and you repeat it over and over, every decision, every choice you make will be lived out in future generations. And somehow our ancestors knew this. They didn't need libraries. They needed something that was memorable and that was an instruction that would carry forward to future generations. And it's not just with weaving and the symbols, it was for food, dangerous toxic food, or how to grow food. We're talking about how epigenetics actually influence our DNA. It's constantly replicating, isn't it? Keeps replicating. Sometimes they'll have mutation, or what we call evolving.
And are there different patterns and icons from family to family or from clan to clan?
The Slavs, or the Slavic Christianity, Orthodox or Catholic, is dual faith, very much like the Mexican Catholic population. The way they converted Yugoslav was, hey, we notice you have a patron icon in front of your house or your household, and it could be Baba Yaga, it could be the bird goddess, it could be whatever. And they said, we'll allow you to keep that coat of arms or that flag, and you can pick a saint. But they still kept their Baba Yaga, their Virgin Mary, so to speak, or all these other goddesses that were supposedly squashed, but they actually had a coat of arms motif that still lives to this day with the weavers. What they did was is to orchestrate a sense of order within chaos. And with the Slavic Moist Mother Earth and their Slavic goddess Prepogla, the goddesses can actually weave the stones as bones of the body and clay as flesh. So you can see how even the pottery that had weaving and braiding of clay or braiding the bread is about how they, as women and in their womb, have the clay. They can actually birth a human being, weave that into their social collective.
What is the cultural relationship to Imbolc?
With the Catholic Church, that's the time where they do the Day of Bread. It's February. Winter's nearing the end. Spring is coming. So this is when they would take whatever precious grain was left through the winter, and they would make this round bread that's usually in a spiral. And then they'd go out into their village or their community and break bread. Islam does something with that where it's kind of related to Candlemas. The Imbolc tradition is one area with the weavers and also with the fire. The weavers did most of their work during the winter months, because during the summer they could not. If they could not do it during the summer because they were busy collecting the wool, the cotton, or plant materials that could be made into cloth, they really had a lot of work to do in addition to, of course, planting, preparing for food. You can see the connection where the weavers during the winter month needed the light. And this is where Candlemas comes in. Imbolc is either called Imbolc or Candlemas in Bosnia on February 2nd. And I found too with the weaving, like with the Srebrenica war crime survivors and the weaving that was done with the women I work with in a small town called Novi Travnik, was that it was very healing. So as far as like informed trauma care, these women knew that it was like meditative. It was working their hands and it was doing the whole kind of neurobiology type of dance for our neurons, which in the end healed a lot of catastrophic trauma, which has for these women.
It sounds like it's also community building.
It's a social collective, a female social collective that does not exclude men, but has them integrated into a social collective where I say women create culture, but most of the women don't realize that empowerment. We give it up. Well, not these women. I think a lot of the UN and humanitarian and even social justice things overlook this part because I do a lot of forensics as well. They don't realize how if we really empower women and their weavers and what all that tacit knowledge that they know, and actually employ some kind of policy that allows that to flourish instead of in front of hardship, we would have a lot of evolving from violence and maybe perhaps even peace.
Can you say more about forensics?
I am a certified clinical justice expert. What that means is that I work with various municipalities or international governments, their military, to trauma response crews, to social workers, to therapists, cases of war crimes, homicide, domestic violence. I'm able to do a lot of assessments, like for the International Criminal Court, which I'm still attached to. I do a whole assessment, trauma assessment on both the war criminals themselves and also the survivors, the war crime survivors, on a forensic basis about how much trauma they had.
Do you have plans to return to Bosnia?
Oh, I've been returning all the time. In 2019, I did a summit, Women's Trauma Summit in Sarajevo. Because of COVID, it stopped a lot of travel. I am working more remotely, but it's always an ongoing project.
And what are some of the rituals you will be doing for Imbolc?
Get my fireplace fixed. The Yule log for Slavs. And in January and February, they have these huge bonfires in their yard with the oak tree. And that burns forever. So I've been restricted to our outdoor bread oven, which is exactly like the bread ovens in Bosnia and has a history going way back into the Neolithic. I built it according to the dimensions of the Neolithic bread oven found in Bosnia. And I put motifs on it too, just like the weavers would.
You've been listening to Local Motion. My guests today were Claire Noon, a Paionia attorney and human rights advocate who has worked for years in Bosnia and who now sells the weavings through the collective Sovereign Threads of Srebrenica War Widows. Also Dr. Danica Anderson, activist and social scientist and author of Blood and Honey, The Secret History of Women. I'm Kate Redmond for KVNF. Thank you for listening.